trust the process.
Trust the process.
Ladies and gentlemen and sports fans of all ages, welcome to the Swear Word Party. Trust the process. Vancouver's sixth best Canucks-related show. But the number one Canucks 76ers NFL pro wrestling movies, TV, music, and pop culture extravaganza. Please welcome your hosts, Wyatt the Stanchion Art and Jay Bowman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Trust the Process, part of the Hockey Podcast Network, an awesome assembly of shows covering every team in the NHL and a whole lot more. Follow the network at HockeyPodNet on Twitter for new episodes of your favorite shows every day. Speaking of your favorite shows, welcome to TTP and welcome to the Swear Word Party.
She.
I am Jay Bowman, and I'm joined, as always, by the Napoleon of writing,
right,
the Don Draper of pen and paper,
right,
the flightless bird of the written word, the guru of gifts, the flu game phoenix, the magistrate of free the skate. He's got a post full of notches from your jersey botches. No need to worry. Here comes Mr. Surrey, the immortal Count Stantula, the notorious UFA, Wyatt Arndt the Stanchion. Wyatt, how are you doing today? Day.
I'm not going to lie, Bowman, I had to invite someone to the show that hasn't been here in quite a while. Whiskey Wyatt's here for this
one. Oh, shit.
That.
Oh,
yeah. After that, the way that series went, Whiskey Wyatt's got to break this one down for everyone at home.
Yeah.
I'm nervous too because my Surrey Eagles are playing the evil empires are known, the Penticton V's.
The V's, fucking V's. Yeah.
We have like only four players from BC because they get everyone else to fucking come in because they're the Yankees. They're the worst.
Boo.
So my Eagles are all tied up 2-2. They're just starting the game soon. So I'm going to be a little nervous about that. But yeah, we gotta break this shit down. Things happened.
We do. We're going to get right into it. Trust the playoffs again, I guess, for the final time. Good two or three episodes this round. Trust the playoffs, Canucks in seven. Yeah, man, let's get right down into it. Yeah, doesn't matter if it's, the playoffs or not the playoffs. If you listen to our show, anytime is a good time for the Swear Word Party.
Anytime is a good time for the Swear Word Party.
But, maybe this isn't the greatest time for it because the Canucks have been eliminated. Should be no secret to anybody listening. They fell in seven games to the Edmonton Oilers. In a word, gross.
Not great. I'm sure Frank Cervelli's ecstatic about it. He's just talking today about how...
Clarence Cervelli?
Yeah.
About
how rich Vancouver people talk about being... I'm sorry, but like, I don't know if you, but maybe he's just hanging out with Aquilini, but everyone's talking about how like, we're tight for cash. Cost of living here is terrible. Everyone knows that.
What did I just tell you before we went on the air? I had my water heater leak and go and basically get foobarred. So I had to buy a new one and all of a sudden, boom, I'm out like $1,600. And, I feel that shit. I'm having, you know what I'm having for lunch all next week? Fuck, next month? Bread sandwiches.
Yeah, just bread.
Yeah. Two pieces of bread. Yep.
Yep. Two. Wow. That's luxury. You guys have two.
I'm cutting really back in other areas. Yeah. Having some bread sandwiches and, maybe I'll sprinkle some ramen on there on payday. But
I feel like he doesn't understand sarcasm. Maybe he hears people going, "Yeah, I'm so rich," and they hear the crying as we say it.
that has to be it,
right?
Like, nobody who's got the time to peer out on Twitter is like wealthy.
Like here's the closest I can get to. Like obviously this is the Instagram lifestyle. You get your Starbucks. You're having a good time in the sun. That's as close as we get to brand emotion.
Yep.
Like other than that, like there are a lot of things to make fun of Vancouver for, but like us collectively. Talk about how wealthy we are.
That's not it, man. Yeah.
Like, That's what pains me. Like, we're losing to fucking Shelbyville, and you got fucking Sarah Valley out here fucking talking about, like, I like it. They put their jeans on one leg at a time, like me. Like, what are we fucking doing?
Bunch of working class people. You know, my kind of people with their pickup trucks and shut the fuck up. Just not even like 3 hours ago, I found out another friend of mine that I have will be defecting to Calgary because he can get a house for like him and his lady can get a house for like $780,000 or whatever, and it's a nice enough house. Yep. So, and I've accepted that I'll never own a house. I'm holding on to this condo for dear life for the rest of my life if I can.
Unless you inherit a house here and or are very rich from, you know, wealthy parents, you're fucked.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Like, so Frank's a bit off. So, I mean, we're dealing with the fall. That's what we all, you said it best. Like, there were bragging rights in the line of this series, right?
Yeah.
Like, they were going to make fun of us for our West Coast ways. We were going to make fun of them for being inbreds. And that was on the line.
Fucking hillbillies, yeah.
And we lost.
Yep.
And it hurts.
It does.
And like I said, like, I'm trying not to engage as much. Like you said, Nashville kind of stuck around a little too long. Like, you're out. We're out. I'm going to back off. I'm going to do their thing. I still have a lot of Edmonton fans in my mentions. Like I said, they're still thinking of me.
Yeah, they're fucked. Like, you know what? We didn't go at Nashville people afterwards and keep dancing on their grave and stuff.
Because
I see it too, man. Like, they are. They're in your mentions. They're just out there talking shit about Vancouver still. And yeah, Flint, Michigan, Mega Bowl. We got to eat it, right? Yep. We're just going to have to eat that shit. Like, you ever you watch Shorzy?
Yep.
Yeah, when they were teasing him about the Blueberry Bulldogs when he was reffing the hockey, and he was just like, just had to take it, just wasn't chirping back. Yeah, you won. You won in seven. I got to accept that. Let you have your moment and stuff, but also maybe turn your attention to the current thing, because they keep coming, and it's like, you need to fuck off and get over this.
Yeah, you guys won. You should be happy in your third round, but they keep coming. I think, again, we all knew... Collectively, we were the better market, and we have the better trash talkers. And I think they're just like, they're trying to get their win now in the third round. It's like, guys, you know, just move on.
Yeah, and I will say with full certainty, this fan base would have been fucking insufferable if they won the series and made it the West. Like, that's something I saw a little bit of chatter was like, oh, you'd be doing the same thing if you won. Yeah, we didn't, so we don't get to, but... Yeah, but I also feel like we're like, all right, Dallas. Now let's have a go at these Dallas people, right? We wouldn't have kept, you know, throwing shade at
next war. Yeah,
Move on to the next one. That's how we do. But yeah, oh man, I was so bummed, about that. And next year, maybe the, you know, Canucks beat the Oilers in their first matchup of the season or whatever. Then they could weaponize this and throw it right back at us. And you know what? We got to eat it.
Yeah, I can't. I don't want them to win a cup, mostly because I can't. If Stuart Skinner wins a cup, that hurts me, like, on a moral level. I can't. Someone like that, his goaltending was so piss poor. I can't have him winning a cup.
That's Binnington winning a cup, man. It's gross.
It's like that old Dan Cloutier winning a cup, Binnington. It's that level of, like, how could this be happening? Because, that's the thing about Vancouver fans. Like, we can admit they have a good team. They do. They're really top heavy. They got good players, right? Like, and again, another thing about Vancouver fans, we can also admit our shortcomings. Our team has some issues too.
Yeah,
Edmonton fans don't do that. Like, a lot, some do, but a lot of them are just like too busy shit talking. No, we know we've been attacking ourselves for 8-9 years. Like, we're well aware of the problems this team has.
Yeah,
and we saw a lot of them on display. Like, when you have like historically low shot levels, there's an issue with your strategy in the playoffs, and they got to work on that, right? So there are things they're going to work on. It just hurt to see how it went down, because I mentioned, like, it really did. Like, after that Game 5 victory where, like, I was, you know, walking home after the game, and it's, like, I don't know, 1:30 in the morning, and there's just this one lone guy just walking down the street, and he's going, JT Miller. He's just fucking living in the moment. Like, everyone had that vibe, like, what a great fucking night, you know? And that really was Game 5 2011 to me, because I remember the vibe of 2011 after Game 5. There was that level in the air of, like, holy shit, like, we're going to do this. That was the feeling. I think that was there after Game 5. We're going to win this round. And then Game 6 happens, and it's that loss on the road, just like 2011, that horrible loss on the road where you're like, holy shit, we got our asses kicked. But guess what? That's going to inspire us to come out even stronger. Game 7 rolls around, same sort of thing. Canucks get a really good scoring chance early. Fucking McKayev can't put it away. And then Edmonton goes up. Now, the difference was, at least, again, I will say, the Canucks went out in their shields, and people debated me about that. But here's the thing. Again, it's not the finals, but there is a huge difference between losing, you know, 4-0 versus making it, you know, 3-2. And we've talked about in the show before, 2011-94. When they lost in the Game 7, it was such a deflating feeling. It was awful. You just like, wow. 94, there was always that sense of pride that they fucking, like, that Lafayette post, they almost had it. Like, they went out fighting. And that's the thing about this Canuck team. Like, to their credit, they did it all season long. You know, they made it close. And yeah, you'll question, like, why couldn't they have done that sooner? But the point is, they at least got it and won. You know, fucking Miller has a chance to tie the game up. But you look at it overall, like, fuck, that was like Quinn Hughes played 28 minutes that game. JT Miller, 27 minutes. Like, they were exhausted. They gave every single thing they had. I think they just learned a lesson about how hard it is to get far in the playoffs. Because that was the thing that came up. Like, someone said to one of the players on the team, and Ian Coley said, someone said to him, man, I'm exhausted. It's only the second round. Like, I think there is a level of, like, holy shit, like, that's where you start learning to pace yourself during the season. Because I think they went all in on the season.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're like, right? Like, Pettersson didn't take a game off. They all went in. They wanted to show the world we're real. They wanted to get the division. But that paid a price because they went hard. Because that's the thing we saw in the old days. The 2011 team, when they were really good, they kind of flowed to the second half of the season for a reason.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you want to, like, kind of pace yourself, right?
Save some juice for the end, yeah.
Yeah, and I think this team learned a valuable lesson about kind of pacing yourself and knowing when to go hard and when you can pull back a bit. And like, I don't say it's like, oh, how could they have gone so hard? No, it makes sense because you're a shit team for 9 years. Why wouldn't you go fucking balls to the wall in the season you're starting to fly? Right? Yeah. Everyone says you're the worst team ever. You're like, fuck you. We're gonna prove you wrong. But next year, they've got to find ways to, like, you know, figure shit out. I hope this is a big lesson. I think Quinn Hughes learned a lot of lessons from this playoffs.
I think everybody did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think Ian Cole did. I think he knew all along. But this is who I am.
Maybe I got to be a little bit more discreet next time because they're on to me.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I think, like, the thing I liked most about the end of season comments was about how, like, they all realized, like, they didn't go, like, wow, good for us for getting here. Like, no, we've got to be better. We've got to figure out ways. Even the coaching staff, like, we've got to find ways to be better. So I think to a man, the attitude on this team is the right attitude to have. Mm-hmm. So very disappointing series. It was like, they're up. You wanted to win. But I think, you know, this is a team that has their heads in the right place. Because, like, I think it was Sam on Twitter said it best, like, the management was real with people. They were honest with people. They didn't try and bullshit you. And that's the thing with Benning. It was all this garbage shit of like, oh, we're going to be great. Like, don't fuck it. We're smart fans. Don't fucking lie to us.
Yeah.
Give it to us straight and we'll support
they
you.
They might buy that team. Shit in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. Or the Utah Wet Spots might buy that, but not us.
No, but not us. Yeah. I was, interestingly enough, so I was at both game fives, 2011 and this one, by way of my brother-in-law. Hooking up with tickets and stuff
go
like
Bills.
That. So yeah, Rich, go Bills. So yeah, trust me, that thought crossed my mind when they won Game 5 in thrilling one-goal fashion. Mm-hmm. That I remembered 2011 and being out on the streets that night and just partying and celebrating and having a good time. Going, there's only one more to go, and then I have looked back on that for the last 13 years or whatever. Going, and that was the last game they won that season. And yeah, when they lost game 6 to Edmonton and didn't look particularly good doing it, I was like, no, maybe it'll be different this time. But no, same thing. Yeah, just getting outshot in those first two periods. Like, they could have rolled over because, yeah, 2011 was like just slowly freezing to death in that game. No jump, no fight. That was a lot harder to swallow than game 7 of 94, even though that one was more, I guess, trauma-inducing, right?
But you look back at that team of like, there's, again, it's not take away from 2011 team because there was a lot of injuries, but there was a sense of, like, you know, those guys went out in their shield, and there is a respect level from that.
Yeah.
Even if it's unfair, maybe that team in 2011 was just because they were fucking broken, injury, all that stuff. Like, maybe we're being a bit unfair, but that's just the optics of it, right?
Yeah, I also think there's a certain element of that team in 94 had to claw their way back and win a game 6.
They weren't choking it away.
Right? Yeah. So it wasn't like they are up and they just have to, you know, not blow it. They had to fight back. So, and maybe, I don't know, maybe the moment may have been too big for some of the younger Canucks who have never been here before and all that. And I think you hit the nail right on the head. A lot of positive lessons to take from this, of them knowing exactly what's required in the first round, in the second round, and beyond. Because I think we'll talk about the Edmonton-Dallas game a little bit here. But and then we'll kind of go more into some of the postseason comments. But yeah, I don't know how the team, even with Thatcher Demko, would be looking against Dallas at this point.
Yeah, like let's say Demko, because Demko's career numbers against Dallas are phenomenal. That was what everyone was hanging their hat on. Like, this guy's going to do it again. And I don't doubt Demko can steal you games, but you look at it like with Besser out for this playoffs, Quinn Hughes was definitely struggling. Like, not all the players lied with injuries. And we know Hronek was hurt, but he didn't want to say what it was. Quinn Hughes was clearly...
Was it his feelings? I bet it was his feelings.
Yeah, it was his feelings. Yeah, someone asked him a question directly and made eye contact. It upset him. So I think with them... But like Quinn Hughes, though, like he got like that natural series beat the shit out of Quinn Hughes. Like they did a
good
job.
Something happened in his chest or his ribs or whatever when he got sandwiched in that game. Clear as day.
Yeah,
he wasn't the same player after that.
And I would love to hear from him, but I guarantee you against the Edmonton Oilers, like he played a lot of minutes, but I think he played a different game because it was a very preventative game. Like, because you've got a team that can kill you on the rush. You've got McDavid and Drysdale. I think he played preventative. We didn't see a lot of fancy jukes because all of a sudden that's turned back the other way. And if Hronek's struggling, the last thing you're going to do is start being fancy. You're like, you're going to play a bit. And so you're injured.
Yeah.
You're overthinking things. You've got this team in front of you. I think that was where that to me, like I always kind of like debated how much to weigh experience, but this playoffs experience for me, like maybe you're kind of like put a lot more stock in that because I think Quinn Hughes wasn't mentally fully ready for what the playoffs entails. And no offense to him, like this is a young player thing.
Yeah.
It's not a Quinn Hughes thing.
Yeah.
I don't think he realized what the fuck the playoffs entail because they beat the fuck out of him. He needs to find a way to fight through that. I think even Pettersson, you know, we'll get the 10 and nice later, but like all players are going to be hurt to some degree. You've got to find a way to still contribute. So I think this was a very big learning lesson. And for me, my favorite thing about this entire playoff run was the one guy who I thought was the fucking king who looked like was unflappable was fucking Connor Garland. He fucking drove the bus in game 7. The guy kept bringing the offense. No moment was too big for that
guy. You never see that guy take his foot off the gas.
Never. Not once. We saw it during the regular season when he backchecked. I was pointed out before, backchecked in a 6-3 loss. He was still backchecking with 2 minutes left. In the locker room, talking to him post-game, he's sitting there. He's obviously, you know, fucking depressed as shit. He's still almost coming to tears about how good the fans are, though, because he loves his fan base now. But he's talking, someone talking like, how, you know, when will you get over this loss? And he said something that I'm sure you and I can both relate to. He's like, I still remember losses I had in junior to this day. I think we can all, like, we're the people that can remember those losses. I have particular losses in my shit level hockey that I remember to this day, where I'm like, I remember that fucking mistake, right? Like, that stays with me. So Connor's one of us, man. And I think that's the sort of thing that drives him. And I think for me, like, I just gained a whole new level of respect for him. And it's just been, for me, my favorite story this season was Connor Garland, just how, like, everyone kind of came around to how good of a player he is.
Yeah, well, we came into it with the buzz of he is possibly soft requested a trade. Connor Garland wants out. I remember he scored on opening night, and I was like, everybody should demand a trade. That's what leads to goals. Yes. And then throughout the rest of the season, yeah, he just became a fucking darling here. And I can't imagine this team without somebody like that. No way. Yeah, no matter how bad things got or whenever that guy, when he's on the ice, is giving it every single time. I remember when my friend Sean was here and went to his first game, I pointed out Connor Garland, and I'm like, that guy's a little fucker. You're going to love him. And he did. Connor Garland scored that night. He loved Connor Garland. And since when he's watching games in Michigan or whatever, he'll send me the odd message here or there because, oh, a little fucker almost had it or whatever. Like, he's a Connor Garland mark.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Well, the thing about Connor Garland is I think like maybe there's a different position, obviously, with the defense. You get hammered more in defense. But I almost want Quinn Hughes and Garland to chat because Garland has a way of evading hits that I think Quinn needs to kind of adapt a bit because Quinn took more punishment than he needed to. He took Chris Tanev levels of punishment. Like, he thought dad was in his head.
Yeah.
Just take the hit. I can do – no. Go to Garland.
Easy gummy Joe, yeah. Garland plays like fucking Kenny Wu in Mighty Ducks.
Yes.
Just like getting low and squeezing past people. Yep. Like if Garland were to go through, like say they're playing the Rangers next year and he goes through like Rempe's legs or whatever, that'd be the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
It could happen. I could see him sliding. He uses his, like, he does not use his size as a disadvantage. So like when Bouchard is making fun of him from his size, I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like Garland's size is his advantage.
Yes.
Like you can't get the puck off him. He's won like every board battle against you, Bouchard. Like
he would be lesser if he was taller.
He was like, that's the player, literally, if he was like, you know, 6'1", he would not be as good of a player.
No.
Like, he adapted to his size and became a great player because of it, right? Like, he uses that to his advantage. That, again, his shot's not hard, but that short stick means he can stick handle and dangle and fucking make incredible passes and, like, win little battles, right?
And
like,
of course he scored in games. Of course he did.
Of course he did. Of course he's the one guy to bring it back into it, right?
Like, that's the thing. I would put serious money on the fact that, hey, Canucks win or lose, they won't get shut out, and that little fucker's going to make something happen at some point in the game.
Yep.
Undeniable. Ah, man. So, you know, again, we talk about Edmonton and Dallas. So,
Wait, is Connor Garland Cody Rhodes once undesirable? Now undeniable?
He is.
He's gotta finish his fucking story.
finish the story next year, Connor Garland.
The final boss who's not going to be Jesus.
No, final boss is Bouchard.
Yeah, just gets the belt up and just whipping him in the corner.
Huh? Fuck that!
Bouchard's just smacking his forearm. Goosebumps! Yeah. Hollywood Bouchard? Oh, yeah. Oh, it's all there. It's all there. So, watched Florida-New York game one. I'm loving this playoffs, though. Watching the other market games and stuff have been really, really exciting. There's a lot of good hockey being played, especially the deeper we get. Loving that series. Sorry to date the show, Jay, but game two between the Rangers and Panthers is currently happening right now. Not as big as the Surrey Eagles and the Penticton Vs, but, you know, watching that game one, Edmonton and Dallas. So I had said last episode we did about the Nashville fans that it's over for you. Kindly fuck off into the night. We are going to kindly fuck off into the night as far as chirping Edmonton publicly. I will so privately, desperately wish and root for their downfall. I was as invested, maybe not as invested as if it was a Canuck game, but go you green fox go. I was cheering so hard for Dallas and was just devastated when they lost. It's a Chris Tanev thing, but it's also someone's got to stop these punk asses.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to hold on to that. We kind of had that for a while. We're like, well, at least they lost to the eventual cup winners.
No,
that does not feel good. That's the worst copium we could have. No. I hate it.
And
at least we took them to seven. I can hear that now.
No, fuck that. No. And you know,
I'm gonna tweet. We taught them how to win. You're welcome, Edmonton.
Yeah,
I will tweet that. Oh,
yeah, no, that's good. But now I'm watching the series out of the East too, going, okay, if the unthinkable happens or the extra gross happens, and Edmonton makes it to the Stanley Cup Final, one of you has to stop them. This is like when I cheered for the Patriots to win the Super Bowl over the Seahawks. I would actively cheer for the New York Rangers to win a Stanley Cup over the Edmonton Oilers. And that's disgusting. Did Chicago and Boston square off in the Cup Final once?
I was cheering Boston for that one.
Yeah. Like,
go Chicago. It felt so bad. I'm like, yeah, Kane scored in overtime.
And yeah, it goes far beyond me wanting Chris Tanev to win a Stanley Cup, but like, I cannot exist on this plane with Edmonton still potentially being able to win this cup. And you know that circular chart with the percentages and their chance for cup or whatever? And then after that win yesterday, the amount of orange that was on that thing, because Edmonton's like cup chances are like 70 bullshit percent or something right now to make it to the cup final, which is with that one game. No, gross. They must be stopped.
Yeah, I don't like their fans will be insufferable as it is. Like,
they already are.
I don't want to imagine that world again. I can't imagine Skinner winning a cup. I don't want to see that happen. That hurts me on a fundamental level. I mean, the other three teams are deeper teams. Like, the thing about Edmonton is like they are very top heavy. So, like, it would be surprising if they're able to go through four rounds and get away with that, but that's, you know, to Draisaitl and McDavid and Bouchard and Eichel's credit, their top four players are playing fucking phenomenal hockey right now. And McDavid's not even hit full stride yet.
Yeah,
like that's the thing. Like he's not even been their best player yet. Draisaitl's a bit hurt, so I think that just speaks to the talent they do have. But fundamentally, like their defense is flawed. Like they're trying to hide CeCe and Nurse in that lineup. Like you have to think a team will expose them eventually. I think Dallas is tight. Like they were just off too long. I think they're gonna come back stronger, but it's hard to imagine them beating Florida or New York as well. But at this point, who the fuck knows, right?
Because that was the thing about the Canucks-Oilers series was I always had this tinge of fear because McDavid hadn't really arrived yet.
Yeah.
And you just know there was a chance that he was going to break a game up. It's like when you're playing Beer League. Yes, I'm going to compare Connor McDavid to Beer League. But when you're playing a team that has like that one guy who's like two or three divisions lower than he should be, maybe he's somebody's buddy who's just out and slumming it, who just like decides, oh, I'm going to score a goal. Oh, we're down by one? Oh, okay. And he just takes it over and goes through everybody. That was always a fear, which never really came to fruition with the Canucks-Oilers series. And now, with you know, he got the winner last night against Dallas. But you're right. He still hasn't really fully arrived yet. And you just hope that when he does, everybody else regresses and takes a step back. Because I appreciated and moderately respected his response after he got the cross-check sandwich.
Yeah,
that like, hey, it's hockey. I love it as the thing or whatever. But aside from that, he was such a bitch.
He won
the high sticks,
yeah,
and all that stuff. Like the one against Soucy, I was super pissed off about because
that's blatant.
That's super blatant.
Yep.
Yeah, rings the guy. That's, you know, Mick Sorley levels of bullshit.
Yep.
Ringing the guy upside the dome like that. Like that's scummy shit, right? So yeah, I can't think of a single player on that team, you know, aside from Stetcher that I like. out of that series.
Yeah, I'm playing. That's what it is. There's no other team that I'm like pulling for. The Nuge is betraying us. I can't follow him. His face is too small and angular too. What's with his face? Come on, man.
Yeah.
Get a normal face, bro.
Yeah, you know, dude, did you skip face day? What the fuck?
Yeah, your fucking sharp jawline and cheekbones, fuck off with that bullshit.
Yeah, put the work in.
So I need some hamburgers. God damn it. Fill up that face.
So, again, Oilers won game one in double overtime.
Yeah.
Devastating. And here's the thing. I'm so invested in that game tomorrow. I want them to, all right, four straight now for Dallas. Just kick their asses, please. I hate all of this. Oh, the Great White North is united for Edmonton. Oh, they're Canada seats. Nope. You don't know how this works if you ever say anything like that.
Yeah, Edmonton wants their team to win. That's it. Like, no, that's we're not on the same page. This is definitely Game of Thrones shit. Like, we're not happy. Like, we don't want them to ascend to the throne. Fuck off.
No. No,
nope.
We don't even care that it's not us. It just can't be them.
Yep, exactly.
And I love the little temporary alliance we had with the Calgary Flames fans.
Yeah, yeah, we came together for
I'm going to remember that. There's going to be a time in the future where I'm going to want to talk some shit about the Flames. And I go, no, I remember, even though we had a common enemy and we were Spider-Man and Venom teaming up against Carnage. I remember that shit.
Yeah, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Bingo. Yeah. Pressers.
Yes.
End of season pressers. A lot coming out of it. Patterson being super aggressive and confrontational with Hronek. you know, really holding his feet to the fire.
So mean.
And yeah, man, that's, you know, I would have been fine with a Brooksy level response, like a Tortorella level response to the media there from Hronek. But Hronek, you know, took the high road, didn't completely. I'm just obviously kidding. That was the big exchange a lot of folks were talking about. I kind of think it's a much ado about nothing. You're, you know, boys with Patterson and stuff. And also, you're, you know, in media. What's your view on the whole thing?
Yeah, like I don't. There are some people in media who do take like affronts like that very seriously and they kind of get up in arms about it. And I don't get up in arms about it. I find it. I don't think it was a good choice from Hronek because it just makes more noise around him than anything. Like, he can do whatever he wants. At the end of the day, it's a presser. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Say what you want. I'm not going to care. Like, I'm the last person to tell you what to think or say. But I will say, if you kind of do what Hronek did, I do think, this is a guy that hasn't had to do pressers all season long. Like, the team protects him and coddles him and says, no, I just want to talk.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, again, some of them I'm like, fine. Like, I understand some of those people aren't comfortable talking, but it is part of the job. As much as you want to like
course. That.
Like, you're getting paid money. You've got to do the scrums once in a while. But, you know, fine. You don't do it. So you would think for like just one session, end of the year, he could have prepped himself and like, you know, looked in the mirror and said, you can do this, Phil. You fucking got this. And just been polite about it and just kind of pushed through it a bit. Because there's no need to do that, right? Like, again, if you're going to lie about your injury, fine. But just like rehearse what you're going to say, man, and get it out and move on. But he made it way bigger. Now everyone's going to be talking about that.
Yeah.
And him. If he just said something like Cole said, I don't want to be injured as an excuse. Cool. We move on to third day.
Yeah.
No one would have given a fucking shit. But because he did that, now all of a sudden, it's an issue. So I think it wasn't the greatest move by Hronek. I think people are like, oh, how could Jeff push him like that? Like, well, no, Jeff, like, all he said was like, we gave you your space. Like, he's true. Everyone did respect him the entire season.
Yeah.
And no one demanded. No one made a story. Hronek refused to talk to press. No one did shit like that whatsoever. But it's end of season, exit interviews. Like, it's just,
And you were shit.
You honestly, if you don't think, if you weren't injured, then why wouldn't there be questions about what happened in the first half versus the second half?
Because
you were a clearly different player.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so
you swapped out for your twin brother who isn't that good at hockey, who played junior A? Like, what happened?
Yeah, like Farfel Hronek came in and all of a sudden now not taking shots.
Farfel?
Yeah, Farfel Hronek gets
Hronek
in there.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. All right.
He gets in there, he's not taking shots. Like, we have questions about it. Like, so that's the thing. If you want to stick to the injury thing, you better have your backup reasoning as to why you played poorly because everyone saw it. And had we had, you know, time earlier in the season to talk to you about that, maybe it wouldn't even brought up. But this is literally the first time people have had to ask you questions. And not just the media. It's also some fans are going to wonder that, too.
Yes.
Like, that's a fan service from the media. Like, what? Why did Hronek do poorly? Here's your chance to say something. And he chose to do that. Nope, no injuries. I don't know what happened. If I knew, I'd do something different.
Patterson's jobs to get clarification and get, like, some context and get some answers for fans who read his work, who want to know and understand more of what happened with the team.
Yeah, and that's Hronek's, like, that's giving the man himself, the source, the prime source, to say it in his own words rather than the media.
Speculation.
Like,
and
So to me, it just seemed like a crazy choice for him to go that route, right? So it's like, okay, that made it more of a mess than it needed to be. End of the day, it was just like a footnote. of the season for me.
Yep.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna sit there and be like, "Fucking Roenick needs to be traded now." No, fuck yeah. This guy. I don't care.
I'm more concerned with the lack of like production.
Yes.
And stuff. And
that's the main thing. How much, if he wants $8 million, you're gonna be like, "Hey, okay." So if you weren't injured and you want $8 million, people are gonna wonder publicly, like, why are you worth that? If you had said I was injured, then people would go, well, hey, maybe he comes back and is that guy from the first half. So I think publicly it hurts his contract demands.
That's what made it so weird.
Right?
Yeah. Like, if it was me and I'm asking for $8 million, I'm like, yeah, I actually had a broken leg the whole time. I'm just a real trooper.
Yeah. Two broken legs. I was missing an arm. He just got reattached.
Several,
I could not go.
Several months of pink eye.
Yeah. Couldn't get through it. So that's like that. So again, maybe Hronik's agents and the team are all well aware of his injuries. It's still like the public perception is part of the game, right? And you think you'd want that noise to go down by being like, hey, I don't know. I know some players are like, oh, I don't want to use injuries as an excuse, but like, it's not an excuse if there's visible evidence that for an entire half of a season, you were not the same player.
Yeah. Well, like, you mentioned like Quinn Hughes and the kind of the lack of, you know, explosive dekes and shifty moves and stuff. You think about what that contributes to on a power play as far as opening up lanes for shots and keeping guys moving, because they were having a hard time getting shots and looks and everything, and you know, sometimes zone entries, same sort of thing. He doesn't have the I think we're safe to speculate perhaps that it was like an upper body, like mid body injury.
I think
for
he had some injuries,
ribs
in there.
Probably
some knee. I think there was some stuff going on.
Yeah, there was definitely stuff going on, but like the impact that has on his game is undeniable. So, you know, it kind of adds context as a fan to be like, okay, and you can give grace. I don't think I've ever really looked at his injury at an injury as an excuse.
No, it's context for me. Like, he's not like, well, we would have won if I been hurt, if I took an arrow to the knee. It's like, no, he's like, well, we all saw what happened. And I think if all of a sudden Quinn Hughes is no longer creating lanes and now you've got Hronik's shot is no longer an option, you've lost two of your greatest assets at the blue line now. Now you've got Pettersson struggling as well. You've lost three people that were a huge threat in the power play. And what was one of the worst parts about this team in the playoffs? The fucking power play.
Yes.
Right? Like,
yeah.
So if you've got like, you know, two thirds of a power play that's functioning, that's it. Like, it's going to make sense because, yeah, like you said, there was no movement out there. And if Pettersson's knee is hurting so he can't skate around, he's not going to move much. Quinn isn't making the moves and Hronik's afraid to use his shot. So they're going to fucking not even bother chasing him at the point. Like, it's easy to shut down a Canucks power play when they're fucking half of them are gimped, right?
Yes,
so
absolutely.
There's nothing wrong by saying that.
Yeah, and let's talk tendonitis in the knee for a second and Pettersson's deal. It's not just, you know, the puck battles along the boards, which we saw he wasn't strong on the puck like really at all. But, you know, what that does to generating force for his shot as well. Like, that's so impactful for all facets of that guy's game. Worked hard, developed a two-way game. Still, I think, played quite well defensively, all things considered, but didn't have the offensive jump and spark, and it's easy to understand why. There are probably still people dragging him or whatever, and all the conspiracy theorying around, like, why did he play so long down the stretch? And, oh, is it really a real injury or not? And even your boy Clarence Saravelli or whatever is out there theorizing.
Well, that's
that.
The thing. Let's listen to the
I don't mean to call
here.
Him your boy. I'm sorry, but he sat next to you. And yeah.
Oh yeah, he used my USB charger, so we're best buds now. So here's the
wait, hold on. Yeah, well, so yeah, how many did you have, Money Bags, Art?
Yeah, I had eight of them.
Here, question: did you ask for it back because you have so many? Or
no, I threw three extra ones at him. I'm like, they're gold plated. Don't worry. They charge quicker.
I'm so rich.
Yeah. I didn't even have those in Edmonton, but up here. Yeah. One other thing, you got a guy, you know, who has not played professional hockey telling you that, why didn't this guy fight through it? What a whiner. Then on the other side, you've got Ray Ferraro, a guy who's played many, many years of hockey, who has dealt with the exact same injury, weighing in on it. Who am I going to listen to on this topic? I don't know. So Ray Ferraro, for those who didn't hear, was talking today. I think it was Donnie and Dolly. I hope it was that. I hope it was them. If not, I apologize. I think it was. Who listens to us? Who cares?
You know what I don't see a lot of?
So it's fact checking.
I don't see a lot of trust the process cited on Twitter, and we don't really create a lot of discourse. You and
they're lawyers in our inbox tomorrow.
guys, you really can't be saying this. And you called the Edmonton fans hillbillies a bunch. You can't be doing that either. Fuck you. We do our thing.
So Ray Ferraro was talking about it with tendonitis, and he says too, like, it's an injury that can get worse and worse and worse. And he said, well, that's also one like where it's not like a bone. There's no timetable. Doctors can't tell you when it's going to get better. So they could have told Pedersen, hey, stay off your feet for 3 weeks. And he comes back and it's still not healed yet. And now he's out of game shape for 3 weeks. So if you're given that option as a player, hey, it might not get better. You might be able to play through it and hopefully, like, you know, just keep going. He's going to pick that every time, especially in a season like this. So it kind of makes sense because, like, if you know, I can imagine the frustration of sitting out and coming back and it's still not healed. So for him now, it's just like rest, I hope it gets better. But that's the thing. There's a whole, that's the level where I think I try and stray away from being like the home doctor on people's injuries. I think it's a bit too easy to be like, oh, why can't you fight through that? Like, that's almost
that's,
like, I
you
made
don't
the joke.
Know. It's not your body. You've got no idea. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I made the joke a day in reference to Tanner Pearson, but that's the same thing. Tanner Pearson, why can't you fight through a wrist injury? And look what the fuck happens from that. Right. Like, we just don't know what every journey is going to be for a player. And I don't disagree that some players will be better at fighting through the pain than others. Some will be better at adjusting their game to pain. And I do think there's a good debate to be had. Like, is Pedersen, did he let the injury get into his head, right? Mm-hmm. Like, was he not able to adjust to the injury like the way others have? And that's just something you can debate, right? But I'm not going to call him like a coward or anything, but I think maybe he just needs to figure out a way to like fight through it or figure things out in his game. So I think it's just, yeah, I'm trying to avoid the, you know, I watched House, so I think I know what's going on here. It's not lupus. Like, it's just, we can at least talk to the fact that, yeah, there was something definitely hampering him. And so for the Canucks next season, like, I think load management is going to be a thing. We always talk about how this is one of the hardest cities to play in for the travel schedule. Like, there's a lot of things that go into playing in Vancouver that make it tougher than other markets.
Yep, indeed. Load management is interesting point to bring up, because obviously the goaltending situation, Shelov's RFA, you're obviously going to be looking to bring that guy back and put him in as the number two.
DeSmith's gone. DeSmith, he'll want to be gone too because they didn't go back to him. He'll want to leave. I think Shelov has now earned his spot. That's a pretty good 1-2 combo.
Yeah.
If you think would happen, right? Like, that's, I think people are pretty, if one thing came out of this playoffs, like the silver lining, that is that they now have like a backup in Shelov's that they know can carry the load maybe and trust him more than they could on like Casey DeSmith.
Yeah, but let's cool our jets on that. We could trade Demko Shelov's to the Stanley Cup or whatever. Calm the fuck down, you people.
I almost said a word from the 90s I can't say anymore, but no, that is not right.
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah.
R
okay.
word. I can't use that. Yeah. That's ingrained as kids, the R word. I don't mean it in a mean way, but I'm like, I can't use
Scumbucket?
Again, something that can put out fires. I just don't think, yeah, we just...
Ah, yeah, I got it. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that is a really silly thing.
Yeah, it's a very silly thing of thought. Like, obviously, I think one of the big things is team depth-wise isn't as heavy as other teams, but one of the things they did have was Demko. You know, they already have him to a decent contract. Like, why? That, if anything, like I said, like this series showed that why you need goaltending depth,
yep.
Right? Like, you don't want to go to Dutch Shelov's, then it's Shelov's and the next random guy. Like, no, it makes sense to keep Demko.
Yeah. As far as, you know, depth and the future goes, obviously a lot of UFA, you know, conversations needing to happen with some folks. So some of the consensus from the postseason presser seemed to be that, yeah, Lindholm enjoyed his time here, and I think it was Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts. I'm pretty sure I got this one right. That said, apparently there's like a full court press with some Canucks players that are trying to convince him to stay, which I think is great. But again, if he's asking for, you know, for too much, okay. I'm fine with Hronek possibly leaving, which again, some people are like, are you insane? Like, right-handed D-men who play that significant of minutes don't just fall out of the sky. They're like drummers in like high school rock bands, right? Like, they are relatively rare, and you don't just want to give up on a guy like that because of a poor playoff performance or a frigid attitude with a certain reporter. As far as that goes, you know, there's now all the trade proposals are popping around. Martin Natchez, it seems to be a lot of chatter around that. But that's the nice thing about it, because Alvin seemed like pissed that they're done this early. But this has also sort of exposed some things that he wants to work on. Same thing with Rick Tocchet. Jack Adams winner, Rick Tocchet, stepdad Rick. Yep. This seems to have exposed maybe some flaws in their design that I trust this front office and this management group to work to address in a really smart way. One thing I did was, you know, I was kind of surprised a bit about was Mikheyev. And Alvin saying that they were asking too much of him to be like a top six forward, and you got to find the right role for him. He's getting paid like that, though, which is a bit odd to me.
That's a bit of backtracking. They brought him in to be a top six forward for sure. Yeah. They saw that 21-goal season with Toronto, and they bought hard on it, and that's on them. Like, he was a one-dimensional player with Toronto. It was all about speed and getting behind the defense. And maybe you're holding on to the hope that the ACL heals up. But even then, he's such an unimaginative player. And for Rick Tocchet's system especially, there is a lot of dumb chase, which would lend itself to Mikheyev's gameplay. But the guy hasn't met a board battle he wants to run away from in his life. Like, he does not want to get... He'll get there first and then back off politely. Here you go, sir.
Sorry to bother you.
Yeah, sorry to bother you. I just wanted to get the puck. It's all yours now. He's like Hugh Grant out there in my head. Sorry about that.
Charmingly befuddled, yes.
This puck is all yours. I shouldn't even be here. I don't even know what hockey is. What am I doing here? I don't know what this is.
That was a good Hugh Grant movie. It was 9 months. Am I right?
Yeah, it's a good movie.
Nine months of good shit. Him and Tom Arnold beating up that mascot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I think Hugh Grant's heel turn in the Bridget Jones, I don't like Bridget Jones, but like his heel turn in those movies was like a coming out party for him to get away from like the early 90s and late 90s rom-coms. That was brilliant for his career.
Remember when he was with that hooker?
Yes. Yes.
Divine Brown, I think.
Divine Brown, the name, yeah.
Yes. Yep. I hope that apologizing comes up, I hope that
imagine
comes
your
up
life you're
going
to apologize on Jay Leno. You have to go to Jay Leno to apologize for the biggest mistake of your life. What a horrible low point. Oh,
but it was also Elizabeth Hurley, man.
Yeah, that's what the hell were you thinking?
What the hell were you thinking? Yeah, like straight up.
The hardest question Jay Leno's ever asked.
And there's a thing. We all cringe. The man was right. He was right to ask it because... Absolute 90s smoke show. Austin, you go back, you watch 1997's Austin Powers and tell me Elizabeth Hurley didn't have it absolutely going on in every which way.
What was the one with
Bedazzled?
Was it Bedazzled? Yeah, that one.
Was it Bedazzled?
No, what is it?
With Brendan Fraser, right?
Bedazzled like a jeans? Is that
I think it might have been Bedazzled. Is it Bedazzled? But that it sounds like a much stupider.
You're correct. You're correct. It's Bedazzled.
It that's a dumbass name.
Yeah. With Brendan Fraser. That's like when he was the basketball player, it always makes you laugh. Brendan Fraser did a great job.
He did. He absolutely did. Ely McKay of Hugh Grant. We'll backtrace.
Thanks for the context. Divine Brown has to be. What? How did we get here? So not to timestamp the game, but Florida and New York have gone to overtime.
Hey! In game two. Go Florida. Luongo versus Tanev in the finals, and then I can go to sleep peacefully every night, not caring who wins.
That's true. And also big news. All right. Surrey's now up 2-0 over the V's in game 5.
Oh, suck it, V's.
Yep.
Ah, good stuff. Good stuff indeed.
But yeah, it's going back to the Canucks and McHale.
Yeah, we got our.
I do think I do like that. I do like what Elvin said in the sense it is up to them to give their top six better players because it's clear to anyone that they only had two top six wingers. They got to find other things for that, whether it's finding room for Jake Guentzel or finding other rearranging things. Like Lindholm, I really like him as a player, but you only give him the money he wants if he's that 40 goal scorer. Lindholm,
yes,
I love his defensive game, but you can't afford to pay $7-8 million to a guy that's just going to be the intangibles. We've done that before. We saw that was kind of what Pettersson was doing. It's great, but you need more than that, right?
Yep.
Like you can't just rely on that. And so I think the Canucks again. There's a lot of interesting names out there. We're going to see if people price themselves out. We've got to see how many. Like you said, this is a team now that people want to play for. People are going to buy into it. I think Tyler Myers is the guy that would want to stay, and people want him to stay.
I think that one, you could take that to the bank. And that was one where I thought for sure he was gone because someone will overpay him because we did. He's a big fucking gigantic defenseman who won Rookie of the Year at one point. I thought he was as good as gone. But the more that kind of gets chatted about with he's got his house in Kelowna, his family loves it here and everything like that, I think Tyler Myers takes a discount to stay and run it back. Lindholm, you're absolutely right. You pay that if that's the guy you're going to get. But at this point, you cannot be confident if you're the Vancouver Canucks that that's the guy you're going to get.
No, that felt like the apex of his career, and everyone has those seasons where they go off, and I think you're going to get 25 goals from this guy, 60 points, and that's good, but you're not going to pay $8 million for that.
Nope.
It's going to fuck your cap up.
Yep.
I think Zadorov,
Who are we talking about?
We're talking about
Zadorov.
Yeah. I'd be willing to spend more on him just for non-hockey reasons alone.
Just Calgary, Vancouver strays. Like, you just played Edmonton, so fair beans if you're going to take a shot at Edmonton or whatever, but man, Calgary, so funny. Zadorov, apparently, family loves it here. City's embraced him. I don't know if that's just some gamesmanship on his end for negotiating to, have the fan base. You got to bring my client back for the fans. The fans love him. He's going to put butts in the seats and all that stuff. But, I got that 91 jersey sitting in the shopping cart right now just waiting to press place order.
Yeah, if he comes back, I think he'll be one of the higher selling jerseys just from people. People love him. Like, honestly, that's a guy you see walking in the street in his fucking custom suit. People are going to high five him. Fans are going to fucking love him. Like, he has connected to this market in a way that kind of like Bieksa used to, where like he just seems to get Vancouver and has that kind of sardonic humor. He's got that style. Like, even the story that Bieksa told of him almost getting into a fight with teammates, like, you kind of understood where he was coming from.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, oh, I get it.
He just doesn't shut up and stuff.
Yeah. Like, don't shut down. He's like, fuck, right?
Also, there's an alternate reality right now where we're all happier, where the Canucks beat the Oilers. So obviously, we're happy there. And then every single person on Canucks Twitter united to respond to any single Oilers chirp with the gif of Zadorov, wah, wah, fucking awesome, chirping at Kane.
So, he gave us so wah. Much. And
oh, I wanted to use that again yeah. so badly, and now like we can't because we've kindly fucked off into the night, but goddamn did I want that.
Next season we can use it. It'll be part of lore.
Yep.
Wait. Yeah, I think, I really would love for him to find a way to Zadorov back. I do know there's a level where we're going to call it the Tyler Myers line, where you're paying too much for a defenseman,
yep.
where like there's no way they're going to leave up to that contract. Yep. That's going to be bad news for them. Like, there is a part of me that thinks that, like, and I talked about it with Luke Shen, like, you can pull the ultimate Costanza here. We're like, oh, nailed your joke. Leave the room. Yeah. You're done. Because if he leaves, he is now a legend in this town forever.
Yep.
People will hype up his time here, and people will think about what could have been.
That guy gets a welcome back message on the Jumbotron and a loud ovation next time he comes rolling through as a member of the Utah Wet Spots or whatever.
Yep, yep. And people will be fucking, like, Nashville apparently, like, they might have traded McDonough because they saw what Zadorov did to them. They're getting a bit of that Michael Ferland-itis, where they see a guy just fucking wreck their team.
That is an itis.
Yeah, yeah, all right, like that. That sticks with you, or one guy destroys your fucking team, like, I either hate this guy for life or I get him on my side.
Think of what we could have gotten for Kessler from the Predators.
Right? Yeah, they would have given anything for that. We need him on our side. So yeah, that's the thing where it's like you kind of see that a lot of teams will probably line up for Zadorov because he probably has money options now. Like, it's again, like you said, like, big, tall defenseman that can play in the playoffs. It gets you far. And yep. that's the thing with Tyler Myers. It was always about, like, what could he do in the postseason? We just never really had the postseason because end of the day, size does matter in the playoffs, and we saw that. And so, to some extent, there's obviously a point you want skill, but the Canucks, I think, also have a system that really helps Tyler Myers and Zadorov, and I think that's to their benefit, too. Like, if they want to make money, more money, they could probably go elsewhere, but if they want to make decent money and also have a system where they excel at, like, this is a good place. And like I think Tocchet's system, which I think there are some flaws with it, like, clearly, I think he relies on dumb chase a little too much. I think Quinn Hughes is integral to his system being dynamic far more than it should be. Like,
yeah.
Because there was times when we were like, oh, is this the fucking Coyotes talking, like, Tocchet's Coyotes, the same style, like, low shot volume. He talks about north-south a lot, but he just can't find the middle of the ice.
So yeah.
He talks about layering the puck, but how many times do we see them pass the puck around, get the point, puck to the point? The Canucks would wait for the layers to get in front of the goalie, and by the time they shot it, the goalie was in position, the shot was blocked. Like, I think they're going to have to look at themselves in the mirror and think, okay, how do we get shots on net quicker? Because Tocchet talked about, like, they missed the net, you got to hit the net, but there is some level where you can't hit the net because your lanes are blocked. They're taken away. Yes. So now you're all you have is trying to maybe hit that miracle corner shot. So I think Tocchet's got to figure out things out. I hope the team and the coaching staff come together to think, okay, we've got to be a bit quicker. Because I do think there are some things that came out in the playoffs where they're like, okay, I think they've got to adjust some things here.
Yeah, and here's the thing. In this offseason, as a fan, I have the faith that they will. Right? This doesn't seem like a one and done magical thing and now we're going to go back to, you know, mediocrity. I legitimately feel and am excited that they're going to get better from this, that there were lessons there. There's no greater teacher than failure.
They're going to look at tape. Like, they talked about all season how they would look at tape, and even the adjustments in game 5, they talked about they made some adjustment based on tape they were watching. So they're going to watch game 6 and game 7. They're going to see what went wrong. They're going to look at the entire playoffs as a whole and be like, well, we didn't get nearly enough shots. And they're going to have to figure out how much that was on our players not executing, how much of it was our system, how much of it was the opponent just doing that. But I have news for everyone, not really news, but like the way Nashville played, the way Edmonton played, like, that's playoff hockey. People shut down the middle of the ice. So you have to game plan for that. That's the thing, right? So Vancouver's got to come back to the drawing boards. I think having depth does nothing but help so they can find some more scoring. Natural goal scorers will find the room. I do honestly have, like, if I had my biggest offseason question is how much are they going to get out of Pettersson in a talking system? I think Pettersson, honestly, is such an East-West player.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder if he's better served in, like, an East-West environment. And I don't think he's going anywhere. I think the Canucks will figure a way out. But, like, he worked so much better than Kuzmenko and Goldobin for a reason. And he doesn't work with Mikheyev for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, He needs someone that can create art with him, and that's not Mikheyev. And that's why Kuzmenko looks so good with him. He know where to go. It's the Burrow Sedin things. If you have guys that know where to go,
yeah,
it opens up the ice for them and the other player in return. And I think with Patterson, there's a whole debate. He's so good. He gets paid so much, he should make, you know, be able to carry a line by himself. Like, that's not always the case. Like, we've talked about it. Other top players have good players they play with, right? You can't just put, like, I can't toss you on a line with Patterson and be like, go get 50 points, EP, right? Like,
yeah,
he'll get 45 because you're a stud, but like,
thank you.
You can only go so far.
Why is my winger playing outside of the offensive blue line?
Yeah. Logically, you know what? You would play this talking system perfectly.
You fucking know I would, man. Couple steps outside the offensive blue line. If the puck comes to me, I'll step over and I'll keep it in with a little wrister around the boards or whatever. Maybe a wrister on net. But aside from that, I'm going to need that extra step to get back.
That reminds me of the game where Ian Cole got beat on a rush and when he forechecks hard. And the next shift, he was like at the red line. I'm like, this guy knows.
Sometimes I'll be playing, I'll have people on my team, and I'll be like kind of standing a step outside of the blue line. You know, I'm not an offensively minded person going, get in the zone. I'm like, I got this. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You take care of your business,
I take
care of mine.
If it comes to me, I will. But aside from that, I'm just going to chill back here. Now, a lot of reason for hope and optimism. Tockett, you know, spoke about how they put respect back in the crest and back in the jersey and everything. It was an awesome little run that they had. Some really, you know, tight playoff games. Even speaking of which, Aquilini coming out of the woodwork and having a good 3 or 4 tweets during the postseason. Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah, I think he must have Drake's ghostwriters helping him out. They must have gotten to a new job after the Kendrick beef. They moved on to help Aquilini type those up.
I just want to say big ups to Chet and Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah, they broke it down for everyone. I had no idea.
No idea. What the fuck is going on? I think I did text somebody about it. I forget who it was. So if you're listening, sorry. But they know more about, you know, hip hop and rap and all that than I do, modern rap. And I asked about, like, what's going on here? Are these supposed to be good songs that people are going to listen to and enjoy? Or is this literally just like a wrestling promo, like, set to music? Because I was tangentially following what people were talking about, like, oh, Drake's a pedophile or whatever, right? And I'm like, yeah, but is that part of like a song that's intended to, like, you know, be a bop? Or are these no bops and just I'm cutting a 3-minute promo to music about how shit you are as a person?
I think it was kind of like Drake obviously has better like beats than his. That's kind of why he like maybe early on people gave him credit for it. But then it was Kendrick's last Not Like Us release that was a bop as well as a killer.
Okay, yeah,
that
good,
like ended it. Like it was like because people were then starting to play it at clubs and like, oh, Drake's done now. Like,
yeah, okay. Now they're playing, okay.
And, yeah.
All right.
So Kendrick leaned into like made a really good track for the last one. And he just again, he knocked this will be ones where like you'll watch a YouTube video like 5 years from now. Remember that beef between Kendrick and Drake? And it's going to be Kendrick completely won. Like he did, like Drake's done. Like Drake had to slump away and slink away. Total win. And it was, again, I didn't know much anything about it. I had to read it. I was just kind of following along and I was just watching it. And like, I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, Drake lost. Like, yeah. Reading it all, like, he got destroyed.
He's a Notorious B.I.G. hitting you with the who shot you, right? Yeah. It's damn, okay, it's a good song. Yeah. And he's just drilling it into him. And then,
what I knew was over was like when he said that it was the line of like trying to strike a chord, it must be A minor. I'm like, he's done.
Oh shit. I didn't even hear that.
You're trying to strike a chord, it must be A minor. And he did like a long, it's over. Drake's knocked the fuck out.
Ironically, Vince Carter, slam dunk contest. It's over.
Yeah,
it's done.
Yeah, it's over.
Go
it's
home.
Over.
Ferris Bueller, what are you still doing here? It's over. Yeah. Go home.
He ended it right there. Just a 1-2.
Oh, yeah. That's a death shot right there. Finished, over, done. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I was really glad that the Hanks got together because I read that and I was like, oh, okay, now I got it. And you seem to know quite a bit about it too, so thank you, Wyatt.
Yeah, actually, there's a reaction video, and when it hits that A minor line, everyone's just like walks away with the computer.
Yeah.
It's like that's a bar down moment for hockey fans. It's like Cody Hodson went bar down.
Bing, over, done.
Yeah.
Okay, right on. Overall, you know, you had a great run in the playoffs as well with your Stanchies. What did you learn about writing in the playoffs?
Oh, it is. It's endurance. I have to pace myself better next season. I got to take like the last week or two of the season off so I can have the energy. Like it was every other night. I have a 9-to-5 job trying to run a wrestling company. I was tired.
Yeah.
Like at the end of it, I was almost like, I was going to give an interview. Oh man. Yeah. I got to learn lessons. I got to fucking get some cardio in next season. I got to fucking got to bring my A game up a bit because it was exhausting because you'd be at the arena and after normal post games, it's like, yeah, fucking 20 minutes downstairs.
You're like the last guy there every time.
Yeah, now it's like you go down and the postgame stuff's like an hour and 20 minutes because now CBC's involved and they've got like that panel of the two players and it's got the, you've got the other team coming out first and it was like, you know, and play and teams take longer to get media availability during the playoffs. It was like an hour and a half out there. So, you know, it was a grind. Again, I would have kept writing, would have been fun, but there's a part of me that's like, I get to rest a bit now. And I think, I'll, like, no jokes, I will prepare for next season differently in the playoffs because it was a lot, man. Like, I will take time off from my 9-to-5 job next year because it's just brutal to like be at the arena at 3 a.m. then go to UBC the next day at 9. Like, it's like, no, I'm good.
And then, yeah, round 2, game 2, you also have this wrestling show at the Commodore, which ran up against the Canucks game, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Still a great fucking crowd that came out, though. People that were there were having a great time and got to see a really, really good show. And did you see Sarah Sivian on Sakaris and Price?
No, I didn't see it.
So she wrote the article talking about like Botchford and stuff. And, you know, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, she has safe travel through our lands whenever she likes.
Oh, yeah. I saw her once at Rogerina in the media once. I said hi.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, she seems to get and understand this market. And the market seems to like her as well. So she was talking about things and, you know, Botchford's influence and all that. And, like, she mentioned you.
Oh, I didn't know.
She mentioned Wyatt. It's so funny because she mentioned Wyatt, but not like Wyatt Arndt, which I love because it's a very like colloquial, like,
Wyatt.
It's a, Wyatt. And also like you are, it's like Cher. Like,
yeah, that's our
Wyatt. Yeah. Wyatt Johnson, the player for the Dallas Stars, or no, you're Wyatt around here. But then I'm not sure if it was Sakaris or Price, Starsky or Hutch. I can never remember. But one of them's like, oh, Wyatt, the wrestling promoter. So yeah, man, yeah, getting it. So
yeah, I'll take it.
No, yeah, it was a really, really good, you know, run. It was fantastic to see the city come together again. And the thing I really liked and appreciated was the Canucks were good all year, so people were ready for it and they were hungry for it. I forget who it was. I think it might have been Patterson. I gotta get better at finding out who said shit.
Someone,
we both do. But somebody mentioned how one of their highlights was, I think it was Patterson, round 1, game 1 against Nashville, and how the vibe in that arena was just insane and how hungry people were. I was fortunate enough to be at that game as well. And, yeah, it was Bedlam. That's where afterwards the fella climbed the statue and hung the towel up, and everyone just went absolutely bonkers and bananas. And it was just really nice to see that. The Scott Rhodes Sellies coming back. And just, yeah, walking down the street in my Canucks jersey on game day and passing a total stranger just with a go Canucks go, go Canucks go, right? Like, it was really, really nice. I'm grateful for game 5 and getting to share that with my mom and my aunt and uncle. What a fantastic memory and stuff that was. There was a lot of lore added to the lore coverage. Yep. She loves his shirt, Pedersen Scoot. Game 4 against Nashville. God, that, you know, the comeback in game 1 against Edmonton. She loves his ice pack on his head. There's a lot of stuff you kind of look at and go, yeah, some shit really went down, and it was a fun fun couple weeks in late April, early May.
Yeah, we made memories that we're always going to refer to, and it's like, again, bonded core memories for us that we can now make, and it was 8-9 seasons of nothing. It was all blurred together, just being kind of depressing shit, and now we all have these memories of, like, good, fantastic, fun moments. I will remember lots of stuff from this playoff run, because it was my first time in Media Row for a playoff run.
That's right.
It was just, like, just being in the building, and there was a band called Trilogy that would play in between.
They were good.
Periods. I fucking hated them. You're incorrect. They were fucking awful. They were worse at karaoke.
Them.
They were trash. If you're Trilogy, I'm very sorry. I will take it back if you listen to our show. I couldn't stand them. But that's a memory for me now. I'm sorry, but why couldn't they fit in Nearly Neil for one fucking game?
Mm.
Nearly Neil's there in game 7. They win that game. I tell you now. Because Trilogy puts the same song set every fucking game.
Good.
They mailed it in. They fucking had the same fucking song set every game. I'm sorry. I just
That I'll give you.
It's just,
yeah, that I'll give you.
But overall, like, it's just, yeah, just seeing like the atmosphere and going down and talking to players and just the season was, again, it was after the playoffs were done and I was walking down the street and I just threw on the fucking the Stan Smeal jersey on for a walk, walking the dog, and then some guy, like a couple cars, like honk honk honk, like people are fucking still like respect, again, there is respect in the name, people are proud to be Canucks fans. You can still, in the offseason, make fun of other teams now instead of attacking each other. Like, it's just a different vibe. It's so much more positive. And it now, it, the big test really is on management to keep it going, because there is a lot of overhaul that's going to be done. Like, this will not be the same team next season.
Nope.
And that PDO that we saw at the start of the season, like, there was a thing where, like, a lot of shots off the rush went in that kind of made Tuka's system seem, again, more dynamic than maybe it was. I still think it's a good system, don't get me wrong, but I do think there's going to be things where it's like, he needs to find adjustments too. So he's got to figure that out. They're going to try and bring more scoring depth. They got to figure out the defense, but they do have, I think, a good core to build around. It's, you can't deny that. So it's up to them now to kind of keep doing the work. They got to find the next Sam Lafferty's and Esk Blugers. I enjoyed those guys. You don't pay them $2.5 million in the offseason. No. You see you later.
Nope.
We'll get new guys like you. They've got to get their pro scouting in there. And I think Beach needs to cook at the draft. Ryan Beach, do your fucking
job.
Start
Beach.
Cooking.
Yeah.
Start cooking.
Get the apron on. Get the big goofy hat on. And let's fucking go. Get your rolling pin.
Yeah. And even like Lekkomäki next season, that's going to be interesting. Because that's a guy that, like, he could be a guy that, again, you're not going to expect a ton. But if he comes in and provides scoring in the bottom six.
And it's those guys that hit on their, you know, ELCs and contribute that make all the difference. And I see some dooming and glooming about the prospect cupboard for the Canucks and their lack of picks and stuff. Maybe they wheel some extra magic there. But, yeah, there are some folks who are like, this is going to be an anomaly and there's going to be a regression there. But we've been hearing that shit all season. They're going to fall back. It's going to, you know, be an anomaly there. The PDO, all that shit, and just never kind of happened. They won the Pacific Division for the first time.
I think Quinn Hughes and Pedersen and Miller and Besser are enough of a core for talk system to kind of still give you a good season every year. I don't know if it'll be as good.
Yep.
I do think they do really like that. Yeah, it's a true point that their draft picks, their coverage is a bit bare. So it is really up to them to, A, hit on their picks, and B, honestly, pro scouting's got to find some next hidden gems. They really do. They got to find those Dakota Joshuas. You got to find a couple more guys like that, because otherwise it's going to be a bit of trouble. And yeah, maybe trades comes up. Maybe, you know, they figure you better players and they get him in. But it's a fun outlook. Like, we could game plan to next season. It's more interesting than, like, who they're going to draft at five. Like, you actually see a team putting together, like, when they sign a player, it's not like, oh, they just signed a random guy and they're praying. It's like, oh, they're trying to fit a guy into a piece to get to the next level. And it's a more rewarding process to watch play out than just kind of sitting and waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, and I feel like that whole, let's make the playoffs, get a couple extra games of playoff revenue just to save my job, Jim Benning, has definitely gone the way of the dodo. And now it's just like round two, game seven. That's not fucking good enough. And we're pissed off. That's where we're at. We can do better and we will. So,
yeah, and I think that's like the highest. Like, I can't remember who said it again. We don't really attribute anything
we
to anyone.
Don't.
Someone said that the bar, like, has finally, like, the highest the bar has been set in Vancouver in like 10 years, which is like nice, right? Like, that's true. It's you know, whoever said that, that's insightful. Good for you.
Yeah, good job, whoever you are. Thanks. All right, man. We'll shut it down for Trust the Playoffs here. Thanks for taking the time to do this and chat. We'll be back with some TTP throughout the off season, I'm sure.
Oh, of course, 100%.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got many different ways to torment me.
Quizzes, I got some captain's quarters coming up that are.
Oh, yeah, dude, I'm not joking. When I walked into the rink for the watch party and I heard fucking All Star playing, it's just like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I'll never forget that. Cool. All right. Well, that's it for Trust the Playoffs for this season. We'll be back with classic Trust the Process in the future. I'm Jay Bowman. He's Wyatt Arndt the Stanchion. And no matter how bad things get, don't forget to eat your Werther's candies, and you can always trust the process.
I want you to put the word out there that we back up. Understand me? We back up.